From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up in April, Congress held hearings looking into social media efforts to censor conservatives. Now there's even more evidence that social media bias against conservative content exists. In just a moment, we'll talk with Congressman Kevin Cramer of North Dakota, co-chair of the Media Fairness Caucus. Also, the media loves to focus on the Bernie Sanders-type candidates, the socialists, when they win a race in places like New York or Vermont. But you don't hear much about the growing number of conservatives, I mean real conservatives, like Kansas Secretary of State Kris Kobach, who on Tuesday was declared the winner of the hotly contested Republican gubernatorial primary. Secretary Kobach joins me later here on Washington Watch. And students are returning to school across the country, and some students, like those at elementary schools in a North Kansas City school district in Missouri, are finding something has changed. Some schools are going fully gender neutral. Of course, elementary school students are not the only ones. Several middle schools and high schools are trading human biology for political correctness and embracing the gender-confused movement. FRC Senior Fellow for Legal Studies Kathy Roos will join me with more later here on Washington Watch. Also, we'll be taking your phone call, so stand by. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And by the way, mentioning the website, let me remind you, we have this great new tool for your activist toolkit. It's called the Stand Firm app. It will alert you, actually, every day when Washington Watch is coming on. But more importantly than that, it will alert you with legislative alerts, letting you know when you need to take action and what you need to do so that you can be a part of this great republic of ours. As I say all the time, maintaining this republic is not a spectator sport. This requires your participation. So get the Stand Firm app, go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, or simply go to the App Store, Stand Firm, and download it to your smartphone. All right. Back in April, members of Congress, you probably remember this, the media was focused on it for a few days, members of Congress questioned Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg about allegations of potential censorship abuses regarding conservatives and conservative content. Other social media platforms like Twitter have also been known to shadow ban conservatives on its platform or flag conservative content. And there seems to be a growing trend here. And as we move into the midterm elections, when people are increasingly communicating via social media platforms, what do we need to be looking for? And more importantly, what can we do to make sure that speech remains free and fair in this country? With us now is Congressman Kevin Cramer. He represents an at-large district in North Dakota. He's all by himself in the House caucus in the North Dakota caucus because he's the only one. So he's got a lot of territory to cover. He serves on the Energy and Commerce Committee, which makes a lot of sense being from North Dakota. And he's also co-chair of the Media Fairness Caucus. Kevin, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, it's good to be on Washington Watch with you, Tony. And, of course, I've never understood why it takes two senators to do one man's job, but I'd like to lighten my load a little bit by being one of them.
And here is one piece of trivia, Kevin. I have been to all 50 states and several countries, but there's only one. I'm sorry. I've been to all but one of the 50 states. You want to take a guess at what state I have not been to?
Well, I'm sure you haven't been to Alaska.
No, I've not been to North Dakota because they keep inviting me in the winter.
Yeah, and, well, that's because you haven't been to North Dakota unless you've been here in the winter.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to – that's going to be one state I don't go to. It's just too cold up there in the wintertime.
We'll find a nicer time for you.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for joining us. And I know that back in April during the hearing, you questioned Mark Zuckerberg on the kind of the left-leaning, personnel, basically, mm-hmm. that because everything's coming from Silicon Valley and they have a different orientation. And so that's why some of this, I think the point you were getting to, some of this conservative content is being flagged because people out there see it as different.
Well, I think that's exactly right, but it was actually Mark Zuckerberg himself when he was being cross-examined the day before in the Senate Commerce Committee hearing, and Senator Cruz asked him why he thought, you know, that his enforcement team, if you will, were flagging conservative content more than liberal content, and he came up with the reason that, well, Silicon Valley is where we get most of our workforce, and of course it's a liberal area, and so I thought I would help him out and suggest that maybe he move his next big enforcement center somewhere in the middle of the country, though, maybe Bismarck, North Dakota, or Lincoln, Nebraska. Or,
you know, and that comes with snow boots, too, right?
That's exactly right. And I would add to that that whatever technology that they would need, including servers, don't even require all that much cooling, if you know what I mean. And so it was a little bit tongue-in-cheek to make my point that if your media bias or if your content bias is the result of personnel, you know, perhaps you're too homogenous out there in Silicon Valley, and you need to look for a little more diversity in the middle of our country. I thought his answers were woefully inadequate, and as we look today, we see that the bias continues. The other thing I question him about, Tony, and I think this is, to me, I think this is where the real hypocrisy stands. I question him, I guess I wrapped up my question asking him about net neutrality. He and others like him, content providers, make this point that somehow internet service providers ought to adhere to these standards of network neutrality. And I don't necessarily disagree with him for the most part. However, he's unwilling to apply that same neutrality to his own content. And I would submit to you that even in a place like North Dakota, right, as rural as we are, that we have more internet service provider options than we do platforms like Facebook or Twitter or Google. And they don't want to submit themselves to that same kind of neutrality.
Excellent point, Congressman Kramer. I think there's a double standard here that they want to apply. But I think it's a really good point when you directed the questioning regarding personnel. Because they're clearly, when you look at the coast of the country, the left coast, in the east coast, they do not, by and large, represent the values that the vast majority of America has. I mean, you look at an electoral map and you see red all through the middle parts of the country, and the two sides are blue. The Twitter, in particular, they have, you know, to try to bolster their standing, you know, they have this Trust and Safety Council, but it's all stacked with kind of left-wing groups that is in charge of, they say not having final say, but essentially they're a vigilante police force when it comes to conservative content, and they're free to flag it. And then Twitter has never given us really the explanation as to how they use that information, but clearly it's being used against conservatives.
Well, it is, and certainly some of it's for marketing purposes as well, Tony. And in many cases, I find myself trying to not be overly judgmental, wondering how much of this is evil intent and how much of it is just innocent ignorance. And sometimes I think it's a little bit of each. And in some cases, I find myself almost grieving for them because they, in many cases, have grown up in a culture that doesn't understand conservative values. Or they've been robbed of that wonderful thing. And then they view us as some sort of freak show because, you know, God forbid that our children be submitted to too much content that involves teaching, you know, traditional family values or capitalism or some of those other evil things like that. And I really do sometimes feel for them, thinking maybe it's not their fault. Maybe. In fact, I would tell you this. I thought in that hearing with Mark Zuckerberg that day, and I spent the whole day there. I was fascinated by the questions. I was fascinated by his response. And in many cases, I think I saw glimpses of sincerity coming from him, and I really sort of felt for him. And I give him credit, by the way, for subjecting himself to 2 days in a row to all that. There are a lot of his peers who won't do that, as you know. And I thought, you know, what if Mark Zuckerberg himself was subjected more to conservative ideas, and maybe he'd come around a little bit? Because I'll tell you, that day he took a lot more heat from the left than he was from us, because of course they're ready to hyper-regulate Facebook, and I think he got his first real whiff of what it looks like to be successful in business and still be a liberal.
Well, and I was talking about this yesterday with one of your colleagues, Mike Johnson from Louisiana, a longtime friend of mine. We were discussing the fact that, you know, we want a, a full discussion, debate, if you will, a preferred discussion, over the issues. I mean, we're not afraid to defend our viewpoints, but increasingly we see the left wanting to clamp down on conservative speech. And I understand, completely understand, that the social media platforms, these are private companies. It's not the same as a public square, so to speak, although increasingly they're holding themselves out as a virtual public square, which invites oversight to make sure that everyone has the same right to speak.
Well, particularly when they have the type of market dominance that a Facebook or a Twitter has. At that point, they really do become, in many cases, a common carrier, to put it in utility terms. The same as, again, the same type of platform that they would, consider an internet service provider. Even under that standard, Tony, when you look at broadcast media, free over-the-air television networks, I mean, I've been as frustrated with them as I have been with the private sector in these social media platforms, because there's a public utility. Clearly, the spectrum that broadcasters carry their programming over is owned by the taxpayers, and we have things like decency standards that the FCC regulates, and yet they've become increasingly crazy liberal in how they present news, how they cover news. The foundation of even a relatively decent news story still starts out leaning left. So in many cases, we're fighting the culture, and the culture is being reflected in the industries that we're talking about. So that's why it's important for groups like yours and people like you to be on those platforms and fighting the good fight. And we do the same from a policy perspective in Congress.
And look, let me be very clear, and I know this is where you're coming from, Congressman Cramer. We're not moving to want to regulate everything with government. And I'm not an advocate of that either. But I think what we have to realize very clearly is that social media had become an equalizer to the mainstream media that you just talked about, that has increasingly moved to the left, and so it was kind of counterbalanced by social media. Now we see this kind of increasing censorship in social media. I mean, an example was, again, one of your colleagues, a good friend of ours, Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, who testified before the committee about her Twitter account being censored, or an ad that she had put up on Twitter back in October of 2017, talking about she was 100% pro-life, that she had fought Planned Parenthood and stopped the sale of baby body parts, and they hit her.
Well, and of course, Marsha, like me, is running for the Senate. She's chairs the Communications and Technology Committee. She's perhaps the most knowledgeable person in the House of Representatives on these topics. And she is a conservative, and worse than that, to the left, she's a conservative woman. That's just about intolerable to the left. And so, but you know, Facebook itself, actually, I proposed or presented what I thought was a violation of their standards when somebody suggested that my son be put in a coffin. They didn't find that to violate their decency standards, and there was the result of something I'd said in conservative speech. So I don't have a lot of patience for them, but I'm also praying for them.
Well, and continue to hold them accountable as we can. Congressman Kevin Cramer, thanks so much for coming on today, and best to you there in North Dakota.
Thank you, Tony. Always a pleasure.
All right. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach, major upset there, won a primary, just announced on Tuesday. That's coming up next. Don't go away.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. All right, the media loves to focus on the the Bernie Sanders type candidates, you know, the socialist, when they win a primary, you know, in places like New York, Vermont, wherever they win. I mean, it's like, oh, this is a first. It's a trend. Well, here's one that is a trend. It's not only a trend, but it's a first. And that is in the state of Kansas. On Tuesday, after about a week of back and forth, they declared the victor of the Republican gubernatorial primary. And it was the Secretary of State, Chris Kobach. Now, I happen to know Chris. I served with him on the Republican GOP platform committee at the RNC, the last convention. Solid conservative, a very solid conservative. Now, Kansas is a unique state, okay? It's conservative, went for Trump by 21 points, but it's a different type of conservative. It can kind of swing different ways. And Bob Dole is from Kansas. Of course, also had Sam Brownback, who was on the program earlier this week, good friend of mine. And I know that during his tenure as governor, talked to him many times. It was he did a lot of great stuff, pro-life stuff, but it was a battle. Well, here, for the first time in, I think, six decades, the sitting governor, was defeated by the Secretary of State in the primary. Why? Well, I think I have a little understanding as to why. It's because he has a clear conservative message. And he joins us now. Secretary of State Chris Kobach. Chris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you.
Well, I'm glad, I'm sure you're glad that the back and forth is over after a week.
Yes. The for listeners who haven't been following it, the margin was about 91 votes on election night. And now it's up to 340 plus and counting. So, yeah, the lieutenant governor who became governor, who was my main opponent, he conceded two nights ago, and we are now in the general election phase.
Now let's talk about your message. What was the message that you took to the voters of the state of Kansas?
A very conservative one, as you suggested in your windup for this this segment. I've been talking about how Kansas, our taxes are way too high when the rest of the country is enjoying the benefits of the Trump tax cut. We have a legislature where Democrats and liberal Republicans got together in 2017 and increased our income taxes. So we're the high tax state in the five-state area of this part of the Midwest. And my aim to stop that. And of course, I've spent most of my career fighting illegal immigration and advising President Trump and also candidate Trump on that issue. And so I have a number of things at the state level that I would like to see us do that will make Kansas a state where illegal immigration is discouraged, not encouraged. So those are the two big issues, but generally a very conservative theme all the way through.
Hey, you also served on his Election Integrity Commission, along with Ken Blackwell, our good friend. What are your plans as you move into the general election now? Are you going to continue that same message to the voters of Kansas?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that all too often conservatives or Republicans, I should say, think they have to pivot or say a different message to the general election. I disagree. I think that all people want lower taxes, and I think the vast majority of Americans, including most Democrats and most independents, want something done about illegal immigration. So I won't be changing my tune. There'll be other things I have to point out to voters, though. One interesting dynamic, which some of your listeners may not be aware of, is that it's a three-way race in the general. We have a very liberal Democrat that I'm running against, as well as a very liberal independent, but he's an independent in name only, a guy by the name of Greg Orman. And people who follow politics may remember him. He's the guy who ran against U.S. Senator Pat Roberts in 2014 The Democrats voluntarily took their candidate off the ballot so that he could run as the de facto Democrat. And so he's going to be trying to convince voters in Kansas that he's really someone who stands in the middle and is not a Democrat, when in fact he is a very liberal person who's just, cloaking himself in independent clothing to try to fool some voters. So it'll be an interesting dynamic there, too.
Well, Chris, what you were describing a moment ago was kind of the conventional political wisdom, is that you pivot in a general election. But we saw with Donald Trump that he was one of the first I've ever seen as president who did not pivot at all. In fact, he just kind of put the pedal to the metal and just continued to roar with the primary message, which was a conservative message. And as a result, at least among evangelical social conservative voters, he received a unprecedented level of turnout.
Yeah, he really did. He excited the base. He got people motivated who weren't necessarily in the Republican constellation, a lot of blue-collar workers in places like Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania. He made a huge impact in the way he campaigned.
You made this comment. You said, make no mistake, this is a battle for the values that define us as Kansans. The liberal progressives in this race want to bring their Nancy Pelosi-style policies to Kansas. What do you mean by that?
So Kansas already has, believe it or not, the third highest number of state and local employees per capita of any state. We are a very government fat state, and that's happened over the years. We have this unfortunate historical pattern of swinging like a pendulum between Democrat and Republican administrations in the governor's mansion. And so as a result, you've had Democrats combined with some rhino governors in the past expanding the state. And my opponents want to push us even further toward state intervention in the economy and a growing, even bigger state government.
Chris, we're out of time. That music means the session's up, but I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to commend you for your lifelong record as a conservative, and look forward to talking to you again soon. Chris Kobach, Secretary of State of the State of Kansas. By the way, Washington Watch, FRC, we do not endorse candidates on this program. We don't support or oppose candidates. Just wanted to bring you the fact that the media doesn't want to talk about these conservatives that win. We do. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch when we return.
Do you feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, a North Kansas City, Missouri school district opened two new elementary schools this week as the kids returned back to class, both of which have done away with little girls' rooms and little boys' rooms. They have ditched the traditional restrooms and instead constructed gender-neutral bathrooms for elementary-age students. It's not like there's any other options. This is all they have. Now, the North Kansas City School District first introduced gender-neutral bathrooms in 2016 at a center for gifted students before bringing them into a local high school and a sixth-grade center. Now, it's a pair of elementary schools that are going gender-neutral. And the move sparked an ugly debate. Also, this is happening. It's not just in Kansas City. Also, we've seen this in Oklahoma and some other jurisdictions. Joining us now is Kathy Roos, Senior Fellow for Legal Studies here at the Family Research Council. Kathy, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tony.
Now, Kathy, you were sounding the alarm over some of this that was happening in Virginia, and it's moving across the country.
Yes, it is. And, you know, in Kansas City, I thought this might stem from a good impulse on the part of the schools, you know, schools wanting to avoid having to endorse, like, the fake science position that some girls have male sex organs, so they should be able to use, you know, the girls' room when they're actually biological boys. But this is Kansas City, and Kansas City is a hard-left city. They are so far left that my husband Austin reminded me that they are one of the cities that tried to adopt CEDAW, which is a UN treaty, a really radical treaty that wants to abolish Mother's Day in all nations on the globe, you know. So Kansas City is not doing this for good reasons. They're doing it for bad reasons. They're doing it. They're experimenting on kids. They're going to make boys and girls very uncomfortable. They're pretending that there's no real difference between male and female. And they're imposing it on kids with, as you say, they have no other options. There's not going to be another place for these children to go. And importantly, Tony, these are not single-sex bathrooms where, like you might see at a coffee shop, where you go in, you open the door, right, and it's a Right. They have communal spaces where the boys and girls are going to have to be washing up together in a common trough, they call it. So these are still private spaces. They're private spaces that girls are not going to be comfortable having boys in my opinion.
So are they going to have like bathroom monitors now, teachers that are in the bathrooms watching what these elementary school kids are doing?
Well, funny you say that. And researching and looking at another news story on this, one of the teachers said, well, this is a good thing because now the teachers can come right into the bathrooms and we can just monitor and we can be right in there. I'm thinking, this is progress? You know, one of the things these news stories are reporting is that how these schools are touting the openness in the classroom and the bringing down of the walls in the classroom. And somebody described it as, well, this is just the same kind of development in the bathrooms. Now, if you want something funny, you go look at what second wave feminists say about this. They are fighting mad about this. They say that it's taking away safe spaces for women. One of the feminists I was reading said, you know, women's washrooms were safe places for me. I don't expect to be sexually harassed by men in there, but I wouldn't feel safe in these types of bathrooms. What if I'm in there alone with one man or a group of men? I can't imagine trying to go to the bathroom, fix my makeup, and then being hit on or harassed by some expletive deleted. So the second wave feminists don't like this. I don't like this. I think this is just giving in to the transgender mentality that there's no difference between boys and girls or men and women.
Now, Kathy, people have to realize that it's not going to be isolated. These are not isolated or going to remain isolated. I mean, we're not going to have just like a couple of elementary schools here that try this as an experiment. This, what we're seeing is starting with elementary. There's a reason they're starting with elementary schools.
Yes, right.
Because then it moves its way on up until it is just pervasive in the culture.
Yeah, it's easy to bully and push little kids around. And I see this as leftists bullying little kids in schools and making them do this thing that's going to be uncomfortable for them. You know, it's funny, as I talk to women and men about this particular development, the men I've talked to who are, you know, conservative politically say, well, maybe this is okay, maybe this is, you know, a way to avoid having to endorse the transgender agenda. All the women, Tony, have said, this is a bad idea. I don't like this. I'm not comfortable with this. And, you know, that may reflect this reality that there really is something different between men and women. Look, little girls, women, they go into bathrooms for different reasons. You know, you go into a bathroom, you can use a bathroom to go in and cry. You can fix your makeup. You can adjust what you're wearing. I mean, it's a private space that women use in a certain way. I don't know how men use the private space of their bathrooms, but I can just tell you, all the women I've talked to are not comfortable with this idea at all. But these little girls in elementary school, they don't have a voice. They're not going to be able to veto this. They're going to be bullied into being forced to use bathrooms with boys. Thank you, Hard Left in Kansas City.
All right, Kathy, don't go away because we're up against a break. But when we come back, the point you just made, the little kids, these kindergartners, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, yeah, they don't have a voice, but their parents do. And what can the parents do? So we want to talk about that when we come back. And also, what happens with locker rooms in these elementary, junior high, and high schools? So it's not these single-stall bathrooms. There's more to come. And there's more Washington Watch to come, too. Don't go away. Kathy Ruth stays with us, answers my questions on the other side of the break. Then we're going to take your calls. I want to know, are you seeing any of this in your community? And if so, what would you do about it? That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for his kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
I'm Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch, the website, tonyperkins.com. Let me remind you folks, as I mentioned at the beginning, new tool for your activist tool chest. It's called the Stand Firm app. We will send out to you legislative alerts tailored for you, where you live, based upon what's happening with your member of Congress or other issues in your state. Go to the App Store, Stand Firm app, or go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over. Okay, kids heading back to school this week, and some surprises in some places. Kansas City, Missouri, North Kansas School, in some elementary schools, they now have the gender-neutral bathrooms. Now, these are wall-to-ceiling individual stalls, but there's the common communal area where they wash their hands and everything else. But the question is, what's next? Joining me to talk about this, Kathy Ruth, Senior Fellow for Legal Studies here at the Family Research Council. All right, Kathy, we were talking before the break about the fact that kids really don't have a voice. That's why they're being targeted and bullied with this, but parents do. Now, before I ask you what parents can do, the Kansas City Star, of course a liberal publication, promoting this as the best thing since sliced bread, quotes the director of organizational development for the school district, saying we had such positive feedback from students, teachers, and parents. Since then, this was about the project last year. Since then, we have decided to replicate the concept in any new construction. That included the newly built Rising Hill Elementary on Northeast 108th Street. But here's a quote from a parent, Melanie Austin. I think it's great. Her daughter is a first grader at the district's Crestview Elementary and in gifted classes once a week at the Innovation Center. Quote, you just don't know what gender a kid might identify as. This helps everyone to feel comfortable, accepted, end quote. So many problems with that statement, I don't know where to begin.
Right. Well, what these policies are doing are putting lots and lots and lots of especially little girls, but also boys, into very uncomfortable positions under the guise of sort of helping other kids who might feel uncomfortable. You know, we've got to remember that girls are primarily the children that unfortunately may have been victims of assault or abuse, okay? They vastly outnumber gender-confused kids, vastly outnumber. So you're now taking this much larger population of girls who are vulnerable, who are sensitive, and they're putting them in a very, very uncomfortable position. And what these girls and young women will say, and I've heard them testify in front of school boards, they will say, my abuser told me I couldn't tell anybody, I couldn't complain, and now the schools are basically saying the same thing. We're doing this, and don't complain. You got to
like
it.
That's exactly right. When we were kids, if you attempted to do something like now that's being mandated, you would go to the principal's office. Now, if you complain about it, you go to the principal's office.
Right. I guarantee you these kids got the message loud and clear that they're supposed to like this and they're supposed to shut up and don't complain. And if you're not, you know, especially these little girls who may feel vulnerable, I have such a heart for these children, both little boys and girls. I mean, as I'm talking this through, I'm mentioning my husband again. He was kind of giving me the male perspective and saying, it would be so uncomfortable for little boys to do bathroom things if there are little girls right next door.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, even just the basics, you know, and little boys think girls are icky. They don't want to be in the bathroom with them and vice versa. So it's all of these realities of human nature we're supposed to forget. It's fake science, and we're forcing these kids to deny reality, deny their God-given their instincts. You know what I mean? All of it.
And it desensitizes them so that when they move into junior high, high school, I mean, literally, when you think about this, just dispassionately think about the insanity here. This is like soaking a kid in gasoline and sending him to a bonfire. I mean, when you talk about all the concern about the hashtag Me Too and the sexual abuse and sexual harassment, I mean, come on, people. What do you think's going to happen
they're doing in high schools, too, now in Kansas City, apparently, that they're so excited about the elementary program. One woman I spoke to on email said she's worried about boys or men causing trouble hanging around in the common area and then grabbing a girl as she's trying to go into a stall or to drag her into a stall or whatever. These are the real scenarios that are being created by this great idea to pretend that there's no difference between boys and girls, men and women, that biology is meaningless, this fake science that we're going to, you know, force on the part of these children who, again, can't say no, don't have a voice.
Yeah. Very quickly, Kathy, what can parents do? What can they do?
Well, I encourage parents to seek an unusual ally, and that is in the second wave feminists, or at least go get their arguments. Their arguments are so powerful on these issues. Take them to your school board. You'll shut up your school board if you start making these feminist arguments. They are unanswerable. But I like sending parents to people like our friend Elizabeth Johnston, Activist Mommy. Activist Mommy has so many creative ideas about.
Well, and by the way, I just got a message from her. She was, because we were talking about social media earlier, she was banned from Facebook. She doesn't know why, but she was suspended from Facebook for 3 days with no explanation as to why. Might be that she's already been talking about this topic.
Right, might be. She was making too much sense. They had to shut her down.
Incredible. Kathy, thanks so much for staying on this issue. I know this is something you've been working on to protect the kids, and I appreciate you coming on to talk about it today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right, Kathy Roos, to find out more. By the way, we've got a resource available for you on this that will help you kind of identify what's happening in your kids' schools as it pertains to A Parent's Guide to the Transgender Movement in Education. You go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over, you can get it at the FRC site. A Parent's Guide to the Transgender Movement. This is part of it. This is part of it. But it doesn't stop here. It goes even further. 866-372-7234. As I promise, I'm going to get to some phone calls here. I want to know if you're seeing this in your community. And then what do you plan on doing about it? Here, one of the things that can be done is, and I'm tapping on the desk here, because you're talking about innocent kids. You're robbing them of their innocence. And add to this the pornographic sex ed curriculum promoted by Planned Parenthood and Human Rights Campaign that's going into these schools and then putting them in the same bathrooms. Folks, wake up. Wake up. We need to have parents running for school boards to flush this stuff out of there. It's time to get upset. Look, these are our kids. And it's our tax dollars, by the way, that are building these schools and pushing these policies. Let's go to Tim in St. Louis, Missouri. Tim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you. Paul, I just wanted to say that because of this issue, I think it is a great point for school choice and for parents having the ability to direct those funds away from those public schools to the schools of their choice.
Right. Agree. Tim, agree. And thanks so much for the call. It is about parental choice, but it requires parental involvement, and it comes in many forms and fashions. Unfortunately, school choice is not a prevalent choice that parents have. Now, there is another choice. Homeschooling is a choice in many jurisdictions, and I know it's a sacrifice, but it's one option. But there are other options. Run for the school board. Show up at school board meetings. Join the parent-teacher associations and voice your concerns. Just don't ignore it. Find out what's happening. Raise a ruckus, okay? Now, do it within the context of the law, but it's okay to get upset. It's okay to turn over a few tables. Maybe there are a few cafeteria tables that need to be turned over here to get the attention of people of what they're doing to our kids. Let's go to Randy in Kansas City, Missouri. Kansas City, Missouri. Yes, that's Tony, where this is happening. Randy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you very much, Tony. Thank you for taking my call. I heard and read about the article in the Kansas City Star just a few days ago, and the thought occurred to me, or the question, who makes these decisions? And I just heard you talking about the school board, but why isn't it left up to the public to make these major decisions and policy changes rather than some unilateral board that just makes them and then administers the change?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question and point, Randy. And in this particular case in Kansas City, this is not – just so everybody is clear on this, this is not coming down from the feds. We actually had – this was a big issue in the last election. Remember, Barack Obama imposed this on schools through the Department of Education, the Department of Justice, and this administration pushed back on that. And so they removed those letters of suggestion or recommendation, whatever they called them. And so this is not coming from the state. Now, the state is not prohibited this type of craziness, which some states have. This is all driven by the local school district. And ultimately that comes down to the school board. But this is where parents need to get up in arms and say, you know what, this is insanity. We can't have this. And oftentimes, Randy, what it takes is for someone in one of these offices to be defeated over an issue like this to get people's attention.
Yeah, and you would think they would post that they're going to have a public discussion on a subject like this.
Oh, no. They don't want it.
We never hear anything.
No. They don't want a public discussion. They want to do this stuff under the cloak of darkness. I guarantee you if they did, I don't know this for certain, but just knowing how it's happened in other jurisdictions, they may have put a small notice out that this was going to be discussed on agenda, but they did not want to have a discussion. They wanted to do this unilaterally without any input from parents.
Well, and that's alarmist too.
Absolutely.
Because of
parents,
decisions that they'll make this way in the future.
Absolutely. Parents need to give them an earful, even if they don't want it. Randy, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. Let's go to Isaac in Memphis, Tennessee. Isaac, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. I listen to you regular, about every day. Okay, on this thing, all right, my question is, where did this start from about the gender, male, whatever you want to call it. They don't recognize different genders or different male and female and the kids. I mean, this is totally ridiculous, Tony, like you're saying. I mean, where did this start? Do you have any idea where this started from?
Well, I have a little bit of it. Isaac, this is a part of the deconstruction that is taking place of society. At the broad, that's a 30,000-foot answer, because you have to basically take apart the idea that, number one, there are biological differences between men and women, that we're created differently. That is a part of the whole transgender movement, but also of the whole same-sex movement, that we're just all people, that we're not created differently. But where this came from a policy standpoint is that about 2 years ago, two and a half, three years ago, Barack Obama got on this big push, and through the Department of Education, went back in North Carolina, where the mayor of Charlotte imposed this radical SOGI bill that would require people to use the same bathroom and businesses to have the same bathrooms for everybody, and if they oppose it, there would be fines. Well, the state legislature took it up. It was HB2 and overturned this policy in Charlotte. Well, to hit back from the left, Barack Obama then used the Department of Education to go after kids in our schools and force jurisdictions to do it. Some willingly adopted, others fought. The Trump administration came in, Department of Education reversed it, so did Department of Justice. And then you've got some liberal districts that still wanted to do it anyway. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, the history of it. But here's what has to happen. Parents have to say, enough is enough. We're not going to tolerate this. And these people making these decisions, these leftists that are making these decisions, consider the silence of parents as acquiescence. And they're going to do it unless they are stopped. Isaac, thanks so much for being a regular listener and calling. Very quickly, got just a couple minutes left. Let's go to David in Tennessee. David, 30 seconds.
Hey, Tony, thank you for everything you're doing. What I wanted to say quickly was I saw the story about the dad that beat the guy that followed his daughter into the bathroom. And as dads, we got to stand up before that happens. It shouldn't be
absolutely
the activist mommy protecting our daughters. It should be the activist dads. But on that same story, when they interviewed the girl, she said she wished that she had never told anybody because now her dad's in trouble. And that's a very dangerous precedent.
Excellent point, David. Where are the dads? Where are the activist dads? And we don't want it, we don't want it to come to a point of physical confrontation. And we can do that by eliminating these type of policy. Parents, you need to be involved. All right, out of time, but believe me, we'll return to this topic, I'm sure. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, and you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.